This episode is brought to you by Smart Food Popcorn. Some decisions aren't the best, like skipping ahead in your favorite podcast. Think of all the banter you'll miss, the lore in the making. Luckily, Smart Food Popcorn is a no-brainer. Deliciously tasty and available in a variety of fun flavors. It's a smart decision every time. Smart Food. Add smart. To learn more, visit smartfood.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi everyone, it's another week and it's another two episodes of Soap from the Box, the ultimate behind the scenes television podcast. I'm Lee Salisbury and I directed all of the top soaps for over 10 years. And on this podcast, I want you to get to know some of the biggest stars of TV like I do. Remember, there are two episodes every single Sunday this series of Soap from the Box, so I will shut up and let you get on with this one. Okay, so my next guest is famous for so many things, but from 1998 to 2014, she played the first transgender character in a British continuing drama, Hayley Cropper. Welcome to the outstanding Julie Hesmanhall. Hi, Julie.
Hello, Lee. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thank you for coming on. And I always start with a memorable moment. And my memorable moment with you is, I mean, it was all quite a serious time because you were leaving as I left. As I joined in November 2013, I think I filmed the block before your final block, and we had a scene where Hayley wanted to see the cobbles for the last time. And do you remember we had to film David, who played Roy, wheeling you down the cobbles, which was supposed to be this romantic stroll. And do you remember that it was just impossible to film?
I completely remember it, Lee. I completely remember it because it was like, it's one of those writerly things where they just go, you know, and they'll just wheel her down the street and, you know, and she'll look at all the old buildings.
So romantic.
And the actual reality of it is like anybody wheeling a wheelchair down the street, which is like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The wheelchair was half falling apart.
It wasn't the most robust of things anyway. But I remember that block so much because I was so glad to work with you because we had... Actually, some of my favourite scenes were in that week before the sort of final, you know, big sort of scenes where Hayley passes away. Those scenes with the saying goodbye to everyone on the street, and especially that stuff in the factory with Carla. I remember so well us doing that stuff together, Lee, and how brilliant you were, and what a baptism of fire for you to come in and do those scenes, you know, which was...
I know, it really was, because obviously I always say this to people on this, that when you join a soap, you're obviously quite nervous anyway, but then when you find out, because Hayley was one of my favourite characters when I watched it before I joined, so to find out you're doing such a big block, you're like... But thankfully, obviously, you're so amazing and so lovely because you're always nervous that this amazing actress might not be the nicest person.
Oh, God. See, I always get really nervous when people say that because like, there'll be somebody who's bumped into me on the street on a bad day. Who'll be like, she wasn't so nice that day. Would you try to get a train?
But you said about Carla there, actually. I mean, one of the big things about Hayley, what I loved was these, you know, the relationship she had. You obviously had, well, you had Carla, Alison King, which was totally an unlikely friendship, wasn't it, those two?
Yeah, and that was the beauty of it, really. And I think that's the beauty of the street sometimes, that you... I think the trouble is in these times that we're in now, sometimes... producers and writers and people running shows try and find a formula, you know, that works. And very often it's in the most unexpected places.
Yeah.
You know, so you would never, you know, me and David, if we'd have had to do the chemistry tests that they do now and the screen tests and all that, you know, someone else could well have got that part because it's something that builds over time. And I think that relationship between me and Carly in the show took us by surprise as much as anyone else. You know, it started with the big factory siege.
Yes.
Which was the beginning of all this story, really, when we sort of bonded over being tied to chairs.
Tied up to chairs, yeah.
It's one of my favourite stories of all time.
Just how normal friendships start.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Absolutely. That's how I met all my best friends in the world. I taped to a chair.
In a liquor factory on a chair.
But also it was just, with me and Ali as well, you know, that sort of concentrated time working together and making almost like a little mini film, which you do sometimes when you have these big storylines, really cemented our friendship in real life. And we just loved working together. So yeah, occasionally, you know, because Ali has got like a huge fan base, you know, she has all these like fantastic fangirls who post things on Twitter all the time and post like, you know, Peter and Carla films and Carla and Hayley films.
Yeah, no, a lot of them listen to the show and they're amazing. I mean,
they're gorgeous.
The work they put in, I know,
and I love it. I love it when they pop up on my Twitter feed sometimes, and it's always really emotional thing, you know, seeing these little scenes that you've almost forgotten about, because often they pick up on the smallest things, just little looks between us and little sort of handholds that we put in. And one of my favourite scenes was sort of, you know, when Carla comes to Hayley's flat just as she's dying and lies on the bed with her, and they have this beautiful scene of this kind of like of nothingness, really, which is obviously something that Corey has always done so well, when scenes aren't necessarily about plot but are about just relationships.
Exactly. I think that is the big difference with Corey, because I was quite shocked because all the scenes are much longer than the other soaps. But I was watching some old Christmas episodes, and Hilda Ogden's exit was in the pub. And I was astounded, actually. The scene was about 10 minutes long.
Yeah.
And you just think, oh, I wish it would go back to that a bit as well. You know how everything kind of is story led now, and just all the characters are in the pub. And I think Corey's amazing. You've got so many people, haven't you, that are just incredible. I mean, what was, when you joined, had you been a fan? Were there people that you were like, oh my God, I'm going to work with them?
Oh yeah. I mean, absolutely. I mean, you know, I'm a northerner. I'm from Lancashire. So it's part of my DNA is Corey. I always talk about that when I was little, we had a cat called Frisbee. Actually, it was before I was born, this cat. It was kind of a wild cat. And apparently, whenever the Coronation Street theme music came on, this cat would just go absolutely wild and, like, climb the curtains and, like, whiz around the room. It was almost like it knew how important that theme tune would be to our family in the future. And I watched it from being a really little girl. I mean, doing the little documentary with ITV recently, which is all about, you know, 60 years of Corey, they were showing me lots of clips, and there's things, you know, from the mid 70s that I remember as clear as anything, like Ernest Bishop getting shot in the factory, which then was absolutely sensational. You know what I mean? That's just kind of like part for the course on the street now. That's just a, you know, average Wednesday night.
That's just a normal Tuesday now.
That really is. But then it was like huge news, and I remember that. And so, it's always been part of my life. And
what did your family think when you got the job? Well, saying that it was always part of the family's life. Was it the job that they were? I mean, my family, even when I started directing it, could not believe it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they were over the moon. I mean, even when I had the audition, to be honest, they were just over the moon with that, because I'd left drama school in 91, and I'd sort of run a little theatre company in London, and I'd done quite a lot of Fringe, and I'd just started to get bits and bobs of telly over the years, but I wasn't doing hugely well at all. And when I got the call for Corey, it almost felt like this like huge relief that I'd just got through the door almost, because as any actor from the north of England will tell you, you know, it doesn't matter what you do. I could have been playing Lady Macbeth at the National, you know, but whatever you're doing, people will always say to you in the street, but when are we going to see you on Curry?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's such a relief to me.
You're probably still living on value pies at that point, even if you're in the theatre.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, and so people, they're not interested. You know, well, I'm actually doing this, like, really interesting play about the mothers of the disappeared in Argentina. And they're like, okay, so any news from Curry yet?
I read that you actually said that people actually think you're kind of retired now you've left.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've literally never been busier. I haven't stopped working since I've left.
Since you left,
But, constantly. I mean, The retirement questions luckily have abated a little bit, but I do get at least once a week. So are you still doing your acting with a sort of like slightly, some slightly sort of like sympathetic tilt of the head?
I know. Oh, look, there she is. I know. She's doing so well.
I know. And it's really hard. It's really hard. It's a real lesson in ego because, you know, you, the temptation just to be like, I do, you know, I'm just like, actually, I've been quite busy. I've just like, you might have seen me this year and I'm just filming something in Cardiff at the moment. And it's like, but, you know, it's because of the absolute, the amount of time that you share with people in the living rooms when you're in something like Corrie or EastEnders or Emmerdale or any of them, you know, you can't do that no matter how busy you are, unless you're like, you know, someone like Olivia, you know, you just disappear out of their living rooms just for a few weeks and they think that's it. So, but you know, that's absolutely part of the lesson that you learn.
We're in a show like that. I mean, people say that your life changes overnight. I mean, especially for youngsters, but I think it does for anyone when you, I mean, Denise Welsh told me, you know, like she went to a Michael Jackson concert and suddenly she realised this huge applause was happening as she walked in because you suddenly, like you said, you suddenly go from not being recognised on the street to everyone knows you on shows like that, don't they? And they feel they know you.
And especially back then, I think, especially, you know, because now you're competing with a lot of television, you know, and I think it takes a little bit longer to get into like the sort of collective consciousness of the nation, really, you know, because people aren't watching it quite as regularly, constantly, you know, apart from, you know, the hardcore fans of which I count myself.
Yes.
But yeah, I think that back then in particular, I remember being very, very nervous after the first episodes went out of like, you know, what would happen. I suddenly imagined that, you know, I'd have journalists outside my house, you know, waiting to catch me out or whatever. And that doesn't happen. But I remember very clearly, I think it was, I hadn't been on telly for very long, it probably only a couple of weeks. And I went with my mum to Dublin for a little trip, for a little long weekend away. You know, suddenly for the first time in my life, I had a bit of money in my account.
You treat
my mum.
Yeah.
I mean, we still stayed in like, you know, little bed and breakfast. You know, we weren't like fancying around at all. But we went there, and as soon as I'd got onto the streets, because you know, Irish people love Corrie. You know, if that's not too much of a generalisation, but it is big there. And I remember sort of getting out of the airport and getting the bus to the city centre, and then we were walking along and a bus driver sort of like screeching to a halt beside me and being like, Healy, Healy, and me just being jumping out of my skin. Because back then in England, people hadn't sort of started to notice me, especially because I look quite different, you know, because of my wig and everything. So that was my first experience of it. It was like, wow, the Irish are all over it. They had their eyes. And they wouldn't expect me to be on the streets of Dublin necessarily, but I got more recognised that week than I had, you know, than I did probably in the first 6 months in England. So that
was
a little bit.
What was your mum think? What was it like for your mum suddenly being with you and everyone kind of wanting a piece of you?
Oh, she loved it. She absolutely loved it. She really did love it. And I mean, the thing with me getting the part on Corrie, going back to what we were saying before, is that it was an absolute dream come true, and not just because of doing this show that I'd loved for all of my life and that was so important to my family, but also because of the character and because of what it meant. Now, yeah. I've talked about this at length before, and I'm sure there's nobody listening who hasn't heard me bang on about this before, that actually, you know, the character was brought in as a little bit of a joke, that Roy, they were looking for storylines for Roy. You'd become quite sort of established as a character that people really loved back then. He'd been in it a few years. And they wanted to send him on a series of dates, all of them disastrous, until perhaps he found the person that he was meant to be with. They hadn't decided who that would be. And I was just going to be the first of all these disastrous dates, you know, that he would fall for me, I would fall for him, and the denouement, the sort of, you know, the kind of like big reveal would be that I was transgender and that he would run a mile. and that, you know, I would then disappear. Now, I didn't know that. Thank goodness I didn't know that. I was just like, because I'd not only been brought up on Corrie, I'd also been brought up on very issue-led telly, like, you know, Boys from the Black stuff, but also things like, you know, Brookside that had been, you know, very, very forward-thinking in bringing issues to the nation, you know, and breaking down barriers, EastEnders too. Corrie hadn't really done very much of that, really. And so for me to be able to play this role, which I immediately felt might make a little bit of a difference, you know, I was as sort of earnest and right on back then as I am now. And I was just thinking, well, this could be something, you know. This is like sort of my Colin in EastEnders moment, you know, where I can sort of break down a few barriers and people can get to know somebody who has these issues attached to them, and hopefully it'll expand people's understanding of something. So I took it very, very seriously from the moment in my audition that I was told, you know, that Hayley was going to be transgender. So I went out and found out everything that I could about it whilst keeping, you know, confidentiality. And that was a thrill for me. You know, that was always my wish to play a character that might have that kind of impact. You know, it's totally at odds of what the producers of the show were sort of planning at the time.
A quick story. Well, it's amazing, though. And she did, because, I mean, just some research I did, Hayley's noted as one of the most important famous LGBT people in LGBT's History Month website, which is incredible. You become an activist for trans rights groups, becoming the first friend of the campaign group Trans Media Watch. I mean, what's your view? Because there's obviously that argument as well that transgender people should play transgender people, which is becoming more of a thing. But I mean, you can't deny that what you did was incredible. I mean, what's your view on that about people, you know, real transgender people in the industry?
I feel really clear about this, actually. And I always kind of have. In that when I got offered the role in 1997, it was a very different world. You know, there was no trans representation. You know, for me to even find out the most basic things about the trans community and about people going through transition, people, you know, who had, gender dysmorphia, whatever, you know, I had to go to sort of a radical bookshop in Manchester to read up about that. You know, there was nothing out there.
It wasn't mainstream at all, no.
No, it really wasn't. And also the sort of the representation of them in the media, if there ever was any, was really, really crass. Was, you know, made trans people very much the butt of the joke. And it was a very, very different world. I mean, I'm not saying for one moment that things are easy or good for trans people now, because that is clearly not the case. But back then, there was a very different attitude towards it. And I'd like to think that Hayley was part of that, perhaps turning around, a small part of that turning around.
Oh, I think a big part, Julie, because you think, especially in Coronation Street, I mean, with a very much older audience as well, you know, it's very groundbreaking, I think, that, you know, to be accepted by, I think it opened a different generation's eyes to things like this as
I
well.
I think it did, because it puts a human face to an issue that people find frightening and unknown. Yeah. And so again, you know, when I got the part, you know, my mum and dad were really afraid about it. You know, my dad was like, oh, Jew. Oh, why can't you just play something normal? You know, because he didn't want me to get attacked for it. He didn't want me to get a lot of flack for it. You know, I was up for that. And straight away, and quite rightly, there were people from the trans community. There was a brilliant organisation called Press for Change. You were a transgender pressure group, full of absolutely wonderful people. And they were the first to speak out against me being cast in that role for exactly those reasons, saying that, you know, that this role should be played by a trans actor, you know, that that it's not right that a cisgender person should be playing it when there are trans actors out there who could play this, you know, from their own experience. And whilst I completely understood that argument, I felt really, really clear that at that moment, it would have been unbearable pressure for a trans actor.
Oh, yeah.
Because the press was so unregulated in the way they spoke about trans issues then. And it was it would the sort of prurience and the intrusion into that person's life would have been enormous. And the support just couldn't have been there because nobody knew how to support people in real ways in the industry. So for me, all I could do was say, I understand your concerns and your issues around me playing this part, but what I can do is I can promise you that I am an ally and that I will remain an ally throughout, and that I will play this with as much humanity and sensitivity and an education as I possibly can. And I will do my best to represent an unrepresentable group of people, because all groups of people are.
And I do think, in a way, actors, I mean, that is acting as well. I mean, being gay men, you know, there's a lot of straight actors that play gay men. I mean, you have to sometimes play murderers, or, you know, you have to obviously take on parts, don't you?
Well, that's true. That's true. But I now feel, And I was really clear about this when I left Coronation Street, I am absolutely 100% behind campaigns to cast people with disabilities in disabled roles, to cast trans people as trans characters. You know, and you have to dig a bit deeper. You have to look a bit harder. But those people are out there.
Are there? Yeah. And EastEnders and Emmerdale have both done it, actually. Yeah. So at least times a movie
and Hollyoaks too.
So, which is great. And following the wedding of Hayley and Roy in 1999, the Labour government actually announced that a parliamentary working group was being created to assess how the United Kingdom could grant trans people the legal rights they fought decades for. So it did have such a profound effect, which is amazing. All credit to you, the writers, Corrie, incredible.
Yeah, well, it was one of those magical things. Again, it was one of those things that you can't legislate for and you can't plan for, really. It was just, it was an accidental sort of changing of views, really. And you know you've nailed it. And again, I've said this loads of times, Lee, but, you know, when I'm in Accrington Asda and they were like, old ladies coming up to me and saying, when are you and Roy getting married then? You know, it's really early days.
You know you've nailed it, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm saying, well, we can't, you know, it's against the law. And then being outraged by that. You know, you've really done something, you know.
I love that. Accrington Asda is the state. That's the benchmark of when things are made.
Well, it really was, because they've been, a few months previously, they would have, like, that issue would have been like a bit icky and a bit scary.
Yeah,
for them. But they just saw the love story. They just saw two people who were meant to be together, and that things shouldn't be standing in their way. And that's a beautiful thing. And that is what art is. But that is particularly what soaps and continuing dramas do the best.
Totally.
You know?
I think I always say this because they're in people's, they're in their homes every night. Yeah. It's got the most profound effect on people, because no matter what part you do as well, it's because you're in people's lives every night. That's why they get so attached to you. You're almost part of their extended family.
Of course you are. And what is prejudice? It's about prejudging someone. It's about not knowing someone. So having a whole set of expectations and thoughts and ideas about them, that is prejudice, you know. And then when you get to know them and like them perhaps and are rooting for them, then those like boundaries fall down. So it was just an amazing thing for me to play that part, and for it to become, you know, and use this word advisedly, you know, normalized. You know, it was just there was a lot of storylines about it early on, a flurry of that, and it would now and again sort of raise its head over the years. But generally, you know, she was somebody that people loved and who, you know, essentially Roy loved. That was the main thing, you know.
And we have to talk about David, because David, obviously, what an incredible actor. I mean, what I love about David is he couldn't be more different than Roy as well. coming up, you know, arriving on his motorbike.
I know, he's a fantastic actor, and I feel so lucky. I mean, everyone was very jealous of me being able to work so closely with David over the years.
Is it great when that chemistry, like you said, it's not like you have to go to a screen test, it becomes natural, but you must know when it's happening, do you know what I mean? And feel that chemistry. It's almost like a first date, I suppose.
Yeah, it really is, and it is like a marriage as well, you know. And It really was from the second we both met each other, because he'd been really, really nervous about the storyline as well, because, you know, he was always and remains very protective over Roy and about who he is, you know, and about how he's written and how he presents, because, you know, in his in inverted commas, oddness, you know, in his sort of slightly being out of step with the rest of the world, you know, his slight otherness, he has this huge wisdom and compassion, and he didn't want him to be somebody that people would be the butt of people's jokes, you know. So when he heard about Hayley coming in, he was really nervous about it. But as soon as we met and we started to do scenes together, and, you know, he's endlessly inventive, is David. He always wants to put a little bit of business in, a little bit of extra. You know, it's like the actors that really survive on the street and who are wonderful to work with are people who never stop being inventive with it, who don't just phone it in. You know, they're always wanting to, like, be playful with a scene or whatever. And we never lost that, you know. We had our little things like... we'd walk down the street together and he would always go on the outside, you know, to protect me from the traffic, you know, in a very gentlemanly way. So we'd often, like, do scenes where we'd be walking in the streets and we'd just almost do, like, a little choreographed dance where we'd turn a corner and then he would, like, pass by me to stand on the other side so that, and we always did that, you know. And it's in those little details, like, he always had...
It is those details. I remember he always had that little shopping bag, and it always reminded me of my granddad, actually, because my granddad had the same kind of shopping bag.
Like
the effort that actors go to, which I so admire, when, you know, June Brown would know which tea set to use for which character. And I love that, you know, because, like you said, that makes people survive, because people really do take that on board.
Oh, they really do. And you see, and constantly with him, he always had, like, one of his collars underneath his jumper and one sticking out, and costume would constantly come out and, like, try and flick the other one out, and he'd be like, no, it's a character thing. And he'd have little things like, you know, he had this little purse the shopping bag was his mum's, with a key attached to it on a string inside, and that was the key to his mum's house in Leicester. And then he said to me, I want one of those purses that old men have sometimes, where you shake your change to the bottom of it, you know, it's like almost like a mouth opening. And I was like, my dad's got one of those. So he then started to use my dad's little shaky.
Oh, amazing. Pit.
And then he said to me one day, oh, what I want is one of those pound coin dispensers. It's like a little tube. And I said, my dad's got one of those. So you saw I'm one of my dad. That's all. He had little bits of his mum and my dad.
Your poor dad lost all of his.
Exactly. He just rattling me loose change for years.
And you obviously had the red coat. I mean, Hayley's known for that, which is actually in a museum now, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, it was so good. Because I felt the weight of responsibility of having that course after I left, because I asked to take it and I had an idea to sort of auction it for charity, and that never came off. We never managed to get the right amount of money or the right place for it, but not for want to try in. So it was just under my bed in a bag for ages and ages. And then the People's History Museum in Manchester, which is a fantastic museum, got in touch with me, and they were doing a big LGBTQ exhibition, and they wanted to exhibit Hayley's court as part of the tea in LGBTQ.
Brilliant.
And so I gave it to them, and they washed it. I was really scared that it would fall to pieces if it got washed. It was like, they washed it and they ironed it and steamed it, and it was in this glass case in this exhibition. It was so thrilling for me. That's and amazing. Now it's part of the permanent queer exhibition at the People's History Museum. It's in the sort of like... the permanent sort of storage to be brought out whenever there's anything LGBTQ goes on. So for me, it was the absolute perfect thing for it to go there.
That is brilliant. Now, I'm going to give you a quick quiz, Julie, before we move off of Corrie, and see if you can remember Hayley. I found something. So Hayley started as a shy shop supervisor at which store?
Furman's Freezers.
Yes. Oh, God, you're good. And that was with... Amanda Barry, wasn't it, who played Alma Baldwin?
Well, that's how I came in. As I was working with Curly, and I had a little bit of a crush on Alma, and I was a bit of a sort of like slightly creepy character at first, because I kept giving her gifts. I remember I sketched her and gave her this sketch I'd done of her, and she was a little bit freaked out.
A little bit freaked out.
And then she tried to set me up with Curly. And then Roy ended up coming to this dinner party, and we just got on like a house on fire talking about trains and stuff, and he walked me home, and that was the beginning of the love affair. Yeah. So it was Alma who accidentally put us together. But yes, Furman's Freezers, fresh calls as it was, turned into Furman's Freezers.
Yes. And I mean, obviously, Amanda's one of the legends of Corrie. I mean, did you go in? I mean, I think Corrie still remains, what I love about it is for its female characters, it's always had the strongest female ensemble, hasn't it? Which is incredible.
Yes.
Do you feel the pressure going in as a, you know, to amongst these legends? Because you've obviously still got Sally there, you've got Barbara there, Annie Kirkbride was there. I mean, do you feel like you're entering this kind of almost museum of amazing people?
Well, yes, in one way, in that when you go in on your first day, it is extraordinary. Like, and I never lost that.
Sorry to interrupt you, Julia. I think what's interesting, because people listening probably don't realise that as an actor, you would still get nervous going into a new show, meeting other kind of famous people, wouldn't you?
God, yeah, and still do. I mean, when I did Broadchurch, with Olivia and David, and I was just like, well, we did a photo shoot for that, and, you know, there was Lenny Henry, David, Jodie Whittaker, there was Olivia, and there were so many big names in that episode, and we all had to stand sort of like on the pier, like with the iconic cliffs behind us, and it felt like being in Madame Tussauds.
I can't believe I'm here.
Oh, honestly, I felt like I was in Madame Tussauds. I couldn't actually, but I was like, this is just ridiculous. And it's exactly the same as when I went into Corrie. It was like being in that green room on the first day. It's just mind blowing. And I never lost that. In fact, me and David used to always talk about it as being, we'd have what we called a Corrie moment. And this is years and years into us both being there. There'd be certain times when we'd just be in the Rovers and there'd just be a little bit of a lull between takes or whatever. And we'd look around and we'd be aware that we were at the Rovers bar. And, you know, and it was always when, like, the sort of the old timers were in there. Do you know what I mean? Like, sort of like Penn and Rita and Blanche. And we'd just look around. And I'd say, oh, I'm having a Corrie moment. And we'd know what each other meant, because it was just one of those moments where suddenly you'd just be like, what the hell am I doing here? How have I got here?
And I know.
You don't go in any way thinking that you'll be part of that sort of lexicon at all. You go in thinking, especially playing a character like Hayley, who was very shy. I mean, if there was a sort of, if there was a spectrum that Hayley was on, I suppose it would be the Mavis, Emily, but certainly not the sort of, like, you know, the big matriarchs. But I think she became a little bit of a matriarch because she went on.
Yes. And I think you're right. You never get rid of, like, when I used to camera script in the pub, I'd suddenly have that moment of sat there suddenly going, oh my God, I can't believe I'm actually doing this. And that never goes, does it?
No.
I remember my other memorable moment with you is that I forgot about until just this second is, do you remember, we wouldn't have known each other then, but I came up with the EastEnders guys. And we did East Street for Children in Need.
I certainly do remember that.
Do you remember? It was brilliant. And I just remember, because then some Corrie guys came down to EastEnders. And what I remember loving is that the Corrie people were so nervous going to EastEnders. And the EastEnders people were absolutely petrified coming onto the cobbles. It was so funny.
Yeah.
And that must be, was that weird for you, kind of suddenly? Because I always think the soap awards are so weird. And aren't they the first year you go?
And I continue to watch, you know, I love EastEnders, you know. I mean, there was never any, you know, there's always this idea that we're all at war with each other, you know. It's kind of, I can tell you that I was as thrilled meeting like Jesse Wallace as I was meeting like anybody from Hollywood, you know. And I would take my mum to the soap awards, you know. I took her a couple of times, I think, and we'd have to go and seek out characters from other soaps that she loved as well.
Say hello.
No, it was always wonderful to get together with that lot. And we all know it's a bit of a weird club being in a soap. You all know what it's like. You all know how intense it is and how much of a family it is and how fast it is. And it's only when you've been in a soap that you really realise that. You know, having left, the hardest thing for me doing dramas that aren't continuing dramas now is how slow everything is.
How slow it is. I know. When I left and did my first drama outside, I was like, oh my God, we're still on the same scene.
Yeah. And it's really, really hard because you're used to just delivering it. You know, you just have to come in completely prepared and you get like two takes maximum. And if you do three takes, you're really messing it up. You know, so
that's an interesting question actually. So what would you say? I mean, you know, what's because a lot of people would go, I mean, what's nice about, you know, other drama is that you might get a table read, then you have run-throughs, rehearsals, and then you record. Same as in theatre. But I kind of loved the instantness of soap. You know, like if you had a big emotional scene and you all kind of went for it and you could get it in one, I kind of feel like that magic is quite hard to capture when you film it eight times.
100%. It's a real gift if you can, actually. I mean, I'm actually working with a couple of actors. I'm down in Cardiff filming a series for next year at the moment. And I'm working with a couple of actors who absolutely can do that, who can over and over again just access it and do it. But it's a really hard skill to have. And I think what people don't realise, and speaking to other people in the industry who haven't done continuing dramas, you realise this, is just how unbelievably talented everybody is. I mean, the cast and crew, in order to be able to produce that level of stuff with no help at all. When you're doing a drama, you've got, you know, nice lighting, you have music building under the emotional moments to kind of like crank it up. You've got all sorts of things on your side. And in soap, it literally is. It's like theatre in a way. It's like what you see is what you get. It's the first instance of it. So it's very... it's very real, you know. I'm watching like Jane Danson doing an incredible scene this week.
Oh, recently it was incredible. And like you said, I watched those things knowing kind of, you know, Jane coming in day after day, how emotionally draining that is, but also how intense it is.
And she just does it. And she does it with absolute conviction and integrity. And with, after all the years that Jane's been in that show, still absolutely nailing it, doing the work. And also, because I know Jane, really knowing that she's representing people. Again, you know, people who've been through things similar to her. She has a responsibility to mums who have been through something similar, to anybody who's lost anyone, especially anyone who's lost a child, to play that with, you know, utter integrity and truth. And she does it. And she's never failed, Aunt Jane. You know, she's... And I think the trouble with Jane is that she makes it look too easy. So people
she
don't,
does.
Yeah. So she don't often get the credit she needs. I don't think she's ever won an award. I mean, you know, not that that matters in any way, shape, or form. But you know, she's somebody who just produces the goods in a really beautiful way, and that doesn't often get recognised because she does. She just makes it look too easy, too truthful.
Well, I think as well, Jane, what I love about Jane, she keeps herself to herself, because I think nowadays there's the fame thing as well, and Jane doesn't enter into, you know, all of doing whatever press and whatever. She just gets on with the job, which I love. You know, she's in Corrie, but she gets on with the job and just delivers these knockout performances, but without really wanting the praise. I mean, you left, as we leave Corrie, because we'll just talk briefly about your other things, you left obviously with a massive, controversial, kind of important story as well, the Right to Die story, which again, you saying that about Jane, you must have felt an amazing sense of responsibility to do that, because hugely kind of controversial story.
Yeah, it was, and it was controversial, you know. And again, you know, I was asked to give my opinion on those issues as an actor, you know, over and over during that time. But for me, it's about starting conversations. Always, it's not about telling people what to think. And I think this
what
is
what the answer is just to open it up.
Yeah, and I think there's a real, I think that's a real misunderstanding about things. You know, if ever there's anything topical or issue based in anything, I feel like people get very angsty about it and start to think that they're being told what to think or being preached to in some ways. And it's not, it's just a way of people starting a conversation. You might not agree with it at all. You know, within the cast and crew around that storyline, there were many differing points of view. I completely understand that for people with disabilities and profound disabilities, the Right to Die issue is really problematic, you know, because it's a, when is a life not worth living? You know, that question is like massive and philosophical and beyond anything that you should be dealing with, really, you know, in half an hour episode of Coronation Street. But it's just to start that conversation, because...
Exactly. For people at home, when I did the cot death on Emmerdale...
Yeah.
I mean, we just got so many amazing letters, and mainly the letters were saying, you know, you enabled, my husband and me haven't talked about it. And watching the episode, we spoke, you know, there was one just amazing letter. We spoke till 4 o'clock in the morning and just hugged for the first time. And that's what's important. You go, well, at least we help start conversations.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, and what's less talked about my leaving story, really, is that Hayley had pancreatic cancer, and that around that, you know, pancreatic cancer still remains, you know, hugely underfunded and undiagnosed cancer that has got a huge rate of people dying from it. And during the story, a wonderful woman called Maggie Watts got in touch with me because she'd started a petition to try and get a debate in Parliament about, you know, better understanding and earlier diagnosis of pancreatic cancer, having lost her husband Kev to it. And I got behind that petition, and as did, you know, quite a few people on the street. And just at the point when they were trying to get to 100,000 signatures, which is when you can get a debate in Parliament, you know, literally at the 11th hour, we got it to 100,000, and we did. And I went down with it to Parliament to experience that debate. And again, around that, I think there was a lot more conversation about pancreatic cancer, which will help people. It just can't not do, you know.
Totally. And what I love, just as we finish, Corrie, so those were your final scenes, very sad, the nation was mourning, but when it aired on the 22nd of January, it was the night you won the National TV Award for Best Dramatic Performance in a Serial Drama, and you shared it with David.
Yes. Yeah.
Which, I mean, that must have been for kind of, I mean, that, as we said, awards don't really matter, but it must have been a bit of nice icing on the cake as your final scenes aired to win that night.
Oh, it was absolutely fantastic. I mean, yeah, awards don't matter, but
they're
really, really nice when you get them. And I love those dues, you know. It's kind of, I've always loved the soap awards, you know. I think it's quite cool to pretend that you don't, you know, and I don't think some people really don't, but I...
Well, I think the only one at the soap awards is Sexiest Male and Female, which I think must be the worst award to win. And I remember one person, I won't name who it was, who did a kind of really serious speech thanking his mum and his dad, and you think, oh God.
The good genes. And it's always so rubbish as well, because it's like, you know, what sexiness is, you know.
I know.
I
mean, when we had lovely Michelle Keegan in the cast, I mean, she just walked that every year, didn't she?
I know. And the fact that she's an absolutely knockout actor, it's just ridiculous.
Well, exactly. But I was going to say to you, just serial, what I think is, what, you know, you won Best Serial Drama Performance. I just think it should be one performance award, shouldn't it? Well, I don't understand why soap actors are classed differently.
Yeah, I know. I suppose, I mean, that conversation goes on, really, and there's never been anyone, I don't think, from a soap gone into sort of the best actor or actress at the BAFTAs or anything like that.
I mean, I can see why they are different in a way, I suppose. I just think I really champion soap actors because there is still that kind of snobbery in some quarters about it. And you just think, if you can do a soap, my God, you can do anything.
They really... really is still a lot of snobbery about it, and I've seen it in all quarters, and it's frustrating, you know, and the snobbery about the writing as well, and I just go, my God, you have no idea how hard it is to get that much story and keep those characters real and vibrant, but also the amount of exposition that you have to sort of sneak in. You've got 60 years of exposition sometimes to get into a scene, you know,
to keep a show this big. Like, how many series kind of falter after three series?
Yeah.
This thing over 60 years.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And the writing has remained, you know, the heart of the show. It's a writer-led show, is Corrie. You know, I have to say to you, disclaimer, that my husband writes Corrie now, and he joined the writing team after I left. So, I'm a big fan of the writers, and for very personal reasons. But
there's one writer I particularly love, Julie says.
yes, the work of Ian Kershaw is like, but I am really, really proud of him, because, you know, the big racism episode that Corrie did recently, you know, with them.
Well, that was his, was it? Oh,
yeah,
amazing.
It was, and he worked so hard on that, you know, and he was very aware as you know, a white man, that he had to represent those characters on the street, you know, with great integrity, and he spoke to all the actors involved, and, you know, he kind of co-wrote it with one of the storyliners who's black, because, you know, he knew, you know, it went up to him to go in and sort of like, this is what it is. But it was such a conversation starter, and, you know, and it was controversial because it was, you know, issue led again, and you know, some people didn't like it, but he is constantly doing that. What I love about continuing drama, which is, you know, breaking down those boundaries and starting conversations, like I say.
Yeah, and the writers are the unsung heroes as well, because obviously the cast full credit to them, get because the other face of it. But yeah, writing on those things is amazing. Just to end, Corrie, Julie, you're actually, what I saw is you're the voice of the, even the adverts for the Corrie Shakespeare. Yeah. It's like you are queen of Corrie there.
Oh, I'm not, no, that is definitely not true. I was really chuffed to be asked.
But using the 1960, which is when it started, I'm just going to ask you, so for using the numbers, one of your funniest memories of being on Corrie. Is there a funny story you remember or something?
Oh, gosh, right, you're throwing this on me at the last minute, aren't you?
I know,
many funny memories of being on that street. I love the stuff. Really early on, we had some absolutely brilliant stuff that people will barely remember now, where we were with Spider and Emily fighting to save the trees on the Red Wreck.
We were sitting there and
climbing trees, and there was a bit where me and David had to fall down a hole, so that was absolutely brilliant. It's those forgotten bits of it, really.
I know, because we've been so serious, actually, because you did serious. But we must remember Hayley and Roy were absolutely hysterical as well. Nine from 1960. Can you, it's quite a big number. Nine of your favourite characters ever.
Oh, my God, I knew it was going to be this. Okay, but with apologies straight away to anybody I missed, because it just makes
you missed it out.
I love Dev. I loved Becky, Carla, Sean, Fizz, Tyrone, Roy, obviously. I'm going to go for Leanne, and I'm going to go for Deirdre.
Brilliant. All classics. I mean, to be honest, you could say
Steve McDonald. Oh God, there's so many.
I know. You could say so many, though. That's what I mean. You could say 1,960. Six words to describe Hayley.
Kind, honest, compassionate, strong, loving, motherly.
Brilliant. Perfect. And zero, which is quite hard to think of anything to come up for, but if there was nothing left in the world, one thing Hayley would keep?
What, an actual physical item?
Or a person?
Or a bar. Right. 100%.
It's got to be Roy. I know, that's what I thought. It's got to be Roy. So we'll just quickly talk about life after Corrie, because you've done so many amazing things since. I mean, what I thought is you're so brave, but you went into two series that were humongous, Happy Valley and Broadchurch.
So brave.
I think that must be quite pressured, because they've been so successful. It must be quite pressurised joining another series of the same show.
Yes. It was. In fact, I've joined a lot of shows, actually. You know, most of the shows that I've done, there's only a couple of exceptions where I've been in the original cast, like Cucumber and Maggie Cole, and the one I'm doing at the moment, The Pact. I've joined a lot of shows: Inside Number 9, Catastrophe, Happy Valley, Broadchurch. And when I got that, I never in a million years thought that I'd get the call for Catastrophe. I was so over the moon for that.
Well, she's one of my idols, Sharon Horgan. I think she's incredible. What an incredible writer.
And sitting in the read-through for that, what a privilege. I was crying with laughter. It's just brilliant.
And Broadchurch, when you joined that, I mean, I read that you kind of lived in a gorgeous, you lived in a caravan on the beach, which is amazing, going to work every day. Because that place, what I loved about that series is it created that place as a character as well.
Yes.
You know, the place was part of it. But I mean, you were phenomenal in that, Julie. It must be such a buzz when you're on a series, when you know it's amazing and there's this real want and desire for it. Is it kind of going to work every day just thinking, I am the luckiest person in the world?
Yeah, it really is. It really is. But also, just because we're all human, just also like, oh, what time?
Yes,
oh, God, is it the end of lunchtime already? God.
And how long were you there for? How long did you do that for?
I was there. I can't remember. I think May till September, I think I was there. That's pretty normal amount of time.
Summer as well. Lovely.
And that is, in fact, my husband was down out in Cardiff this weekend, and we were like cycling down to the bay and stuff. And he said, that's the best thing about your job, is these beautiful places that we get to go to and sort of like, you know, because they come and visit me, him and the daughters come and visit me wherever we are. We haven't done on this job, obviously, but just been, it is just lovely. And just expanding your world, really, meeting people. Like, I worked with Dawn French this year on them.
Another one of my idols.
Oh,
she's
me too. And I was really nervous about that. I was dead nervous because I just thought, because I'd grown up watching French and Saunders and Vicar Dibley, and I was worried. I thought, if she's not what I hope she is, and she exceeded my expectations. I love that woman so much. She's just every bit as kind and funny and smart as you would hope. And
the trouble with Maggie Coe obviously was an original series. So was that kind of a nice feeling doing something where it's kind of like, right, there's no one before me.
It was. I mean, it was funny with Maggie Coe because there's so many of us. It was a real ensemble, you know. So I was very much in and out, you know, I was back up and down from like Cornwall and Devon all the time. So it was a lovely show to do, but it didn't feel like sort of Cucumber, which felt like monumental, you know, and Cucumber, you know, obviously wasn't as critically as audience successful as we'd hoped. Critically it was. But that felt like a really special thing.
That was obviously Russell T. Davis, the legend.
Yeah, but, yeah, first thing I did.
Denise Black was on this, on the podcast, and she said actually Queer as Folk at the time wasn't a success at all. Mm. You know, so I think, but obviously Cucumber's become legendary as well. I mean, was that, I think working with a writer like that just must be phenomenal as well. Because obviously you would have watched Queer as Folk, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, of course I did. That was, for me, I felt I've been very lucky because I was given the opportunity to sort of lay out my stall after I left Corrie. And part of that was the fact that they'd given me this beautiful leaving story that had lasted months. You know, I mean, people tend to think of Hayley in terms of the way she arrived on the street and the way she left the street. You know, what people forget is that for years there's a lot of pottering around. You know, there's a lot of me just like picking knickers in the factory and, you know,
yes, into the cafe. Having a tomato juice in the pub.
Exactly. You know, there's so much of that as well. And so for me to come out and absolutely have no idea what was going to happen to me or if there would be any work. And I was okay with that. I was ready to be a working actor again and to do whatever I was able to. And the first thing I did was a quite sort of controversial and dark play that wasn't everybody's cup of tea at the Royal Exchange in Manchester. That's what I was doing, you know, as my last episode aired.
Yeah.
And then I went to the Cucumber straight after that, which I think, you know, shocked a lot of people because a lot of Corrie fans, you know, may have tuned in and been a bit surprised by the sex and stuff. But I was really happy about that.
That was another one for the Asda.
Yes, yeah, that didn't quite do the same trick. It wasn't quite as gentle an introduction to queer politics as Hayley and Ryan, maybe. But I was just really, really proud of it, and it just felt true to me and the stuff that I'm interested in, to do stuff like that and to go, actually, yeah, you know, this is the kind of work that I'm interested in doing if I'm able to, you know, and I've been very lucky in the opportunities I've been given since, you know, and I don't say that in a kind of, you know, I'm so blessed where I mean it, you know.
No. But what I love about you is because you do love issue-based stuff, and that's what I love, because that's the kind of stuff I love. And also what I love about you is you're so forward thinking what you do, because you're a founding member of the Manchester-based grassroots theatre company called Take Back. Is that still going?
Oh yeah, still going strong. Yeah. And that's a brilliant thing, you know, because I started off as a fringe theatre girl, you know, how I started, and it's been missing in my life, and we've sort of fallen into it over the past few years, just sort of creating this little community in Manchester of sort of actors, writers and directors who you know, feel like they've got something to say about the world and who want to sort of to be active in talking about stuff and starting conversations again. And so, yeah, we started that a few years ago, and we put on these evenings of scripting and sort of responses to social and political events. And that's filled a bit of me that has really needed filling for a long time. And that gives me a lot of joy and a lot of hope, actually.
And it's nice because I think, like, obviously you, when you were younger, you wanted to do this. I always find I do loads of classes, facts and stuff, because I love to get, because when I was young, it's amazing when people take the time for you. So it must be amazing for you to see this kind of wealth of new talent arriving.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's really, really hard for emerging talent now, especially, especially at the moment with COVID. But anyway, it is,
With nothing open, there's nothing being filled.
So difficult. And especially for actors, because, as writers and musicians, you can still create, and visual artists, you can still create in your time. And actors really, unless you're an actor writer, you do rely on other people to give you the opportunity to share your work and your talent. And I just, a lot of what I'm trying to do now as a public person, I suppose, which necessarily comes with having been in something like Corrie and occasionally being on telly now when I come out of retirement, is to sort of try and keep talking about opportunities for young people particularly from backgrounds that aren't so privileged, sort of working class backgrounds and from cultural backgrounds that don't often have these opportunities for them. Because for me, everything was laid on for me. I come from enormous privilege that wasn't from coming from a wealthy family, but coming from a time when you were sort of state sponsored, so I got a full grant to go to drama school and a maintenance, but I got my rent paid as well. It's so much more of a battle, and you've got to have so much more energy to hold down the loads of different jobs in order to keep working as an actor and keep your spirits up and keep your hope up. And you've just got to find your people. That's one good thing about social media, is that you can find your people.
I mean, what I love about our job, which I hate about it as well, and any partner I've had has always kind of found it hard, is our kind of job is that job you love so much that it is totally your life. Do you know what I mean? I know loads of people love their careers, but I think so for actors at the moment who are out of work, it's like part of their soul missing because it's part of their DNA.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think there's going to be a little bit of a mental, you can't have a little bit of a mental health crisis, can you? I think there's going to be huge repercussions.
Yes, totally.
Moving forward, and we need to be ready for that and ready to look after each other. And, when I see the amount of rancor and fighting that goes on social media now, it's worrying because it feels like the world's getting more divisive just at a time when we just need to be really...
We need to come together,
Yeah, and I don't mean that in a hokey way. I mean it in a real way, really trying to see when somebody's struggling. Somebody put something out there, you think, actually, that person doesn't seem very well to me, or instead of just reacting to it all the time. And
I'm hoping what it has brought is a bit more positivity. Like, for instance, on social media, one of the podcast people I've spoken to, there was all these comments. And I just said, if you've not got anything nice to say, just don't say it. The last thing we need at the moment is anyone, with any kind of, just let's be a positive, let's be positive about each other.
Yeah.
And I do feel there is a bit of a change in that. And I think it's allowed so many of us to reevaluate things anyway and what's important in life.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And to maybe reach out a little bit for a bit of support and help, I hope so too.
Well, Julie, I'm going to end actually with some positive thoughts, because Sally Dynevor was my guest for the actual Corrie anniversary. And when I told her, I was going to read you a couple of nice texts I got, because I told her I was speaking to you. She's put in my text, can't wait for Julie Hares. Please tell her I love her. She's a really beautiful, inspirational woman, and I'm so proud to call her my friend.
Oh, well, back at her. Sally is not only, Sally like Jane, just slightly, never quite appreciated for how amazing she is. The way that she embodies Coronation Street, does Sally, because she can do the comedy, and she can do the absolute heart-rending tragedy with absolute equal commitment. And she's a fantastic actor. But any single person that you will ever speak to who's gone into the streets will say, oh, Sally, we're lovely. She's absolutely beautiful human being. You know that, Lee.
I mean, you could not meet a nicer... nicer person. I'm totally in love with Sally.
And it's like, and she's, I am. I totally am. And it's like not just a niceness. It's a kind of gentleness and compassion and thoughtfulness and a proper engagement and connection with other people.
I was astounded also by people like Bill, who was just, again, I thought, Corrie Legend, he's going to be, knew everyone's names, made the time to come over to.
I've always said that the reason that Corrie is a friendly place to live is that top to bottom, the number one on that show, the person that, you know, who's been there the longest, still comes and introduces himself to everybody who's in that green room. If they're just in to play a copper or a nurse, hello, I'm Bill. What are you playing? Do you know where the tea and coffee is, gentlemen?
The other person, I mean, need to play the right message, is Kath here, if you can hear this.
Oh, babe, I'm obsessed with Juliet. She's literally like my official acting idol. I adore her. She's up there with Julie Walters. Please give her my love.
Oh, there we go.
I love her. Well, I'm very, very proud of her for everything that she's doing. She's a plumbing inspiration, is Kath. It's like,
she is a legend. We've been working obviously really closely with her and the ceremony. If anyone still hasn't watched it, the ceremony that you can see online. But yeah, she's amazing. I mean, I think I always say Kath's one of those old school stars that could do anything. Yes. She's like a proper variety star from years ago where it's like, oh my God, you can also do that.
Yeah, there's nothing she can't do. And then and she's also like, she's also impossibly glamorous and well turned out all the time.
While I'm dragging myself out, she's kind of there. Oh,
and it just gives me so much joy. I just think that when a little boy is growing up, he'll just see all these pictures of her, you know, and just be like, oh my God, my mom, she's like old Hollywood for me. You know, she's just completely... And just fantastic at everything she turns around to. She really
as you are, Julie. And thank you so much for coming on. It's been a pleasure to catch up with you.
And you too, Liam. Thank you so much.
Loads of love.
Take care, Liam.
Thank you so much to Julie for being a guest on the podcast. What an actress and what a lady. Remember, there are two episodes every week this series of Soap from the Box. The other one is with Emmerdale and Shameless star Kelly Hollis. Also news for you, you can also hear my brand new show, The A to Z of Soap, on Great British Radio every Saturday at 3 p.m. You can also hear selected highlights of Soap from the Box throughout the week on Great British Radio. You can listen online, you can listen on your Alexa, you can get the app, and you can find them on social media at GRBRUK. Thank you, as usual, to David Stevens and the Bothy for their edit and technical wizardry, and to Ian McCallum for his press help. Have a great week. I hope it's sunny for you. See you next week. Bye.